I come right back to the point. You know that an MP, for all that these people tell us, this is parochial and you don't want to talk about any of these other issues, they ain't relevant. But the same person who is chosen could tomorrow be put in the cabinet and be put in responsibility, given responsibility for a serious ministry. And you know that you don't have a clue about where they stand on anything other than the parochial issues.
True.
That'll make sense to me. That's what I talk about when I say that this thing, this is a failure. Because, I mean, there's a possibility that in all of these circumstances, for all politicians will come and promise you things. And they will tell you, it is my present intention that we should do X or Y. But then once they get there, they'll tell you, well, circumstances have changed. Circumstances can change with respect to Ms. Moore. She could be put in the cabinet and resign from the Barbados Workers Union, notwithstanding all that she has said already. It is possible, all right? But we don't even have an understanding of her broader vision as an MP. The same thing applies to the same Mr. Reefer that people now looking at as a potential for the next general election. And this applies to all of the people who came to us as candidates. There are unknowns in many areas and can be imposed upon us as cabinet ministers.
But my final thought, right? I think that Ms. Molly can't turn on this line because I realize that we got buses, my garbage get picked up every day, the roads are getting fixed as you drive through Barbados. You know, she handled COVID pretty well. When the prison burned, you know, she handled that situation very well. So I think these are things that I like about her. I like that she continues the same thing, she's continuing, she don't get arrogant, you know, and try to superimpose things on individuals in the country. I used to believe that she was in the election.
People like you.
But less people.
People like you are important in also indicating to the government, you've highlighted the things that you like. What are the things that concern you?
The things that I don't like in government, I believe that within the whole, I believe the cabinet is too big, that's number one. Saying you want more hands to do light work and saying that you need 20 more in your, to help things to make things easier.
To do the heavy lifting.
Heavy lifting, et cetera. I don't see a need for a cabinet that big. Yeah, I'm saying? That's
what is saying. The heavy lifting, though? We haven't had that defined.
I don't know. She never explained the heavy lifting.
You know, and every time I hear, I wonder what that means.
She never explained it, right? So I know what the heavy lifting is. But I personally feel like that the cabinet is too big. You understand? I think we only need 14 or 15 people. We don't need all those 20 something people or whatever to run this country. Yeah, they've got 30 constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not mean that you need 30 ministers.
And therefore the point that must be made here is that even if you support the government in general, you still have areas of concern that you want them to tackle. And there's certain positions that the government may take that you're not going to accept it. And that's where you have to balance these two interests, you know. It doesn't necessarily mean that the people out there who don't necessarily want to get rid of the administration as it is right now, they think, you know, when you make comparisons and that sort of thing, you say, well, this is better than what we had before. But it doesn't mean that people are going to swallow everything that you put at them. Down to Brass Tacks, we are joined via Zoom by economist Carlos Fort, who is in Canada. Good afternoon, Mr. Fort.
Good afternoon, Ms. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm doing well.
Yes.
I just called in today. I wanted to speak about the recent Standard & Poor's rating.
Yeah.
It is against the background that I am recognizing for quite some time now that generally many Barbadians seem to misunderstand the the purpose of the ratings and what they actually represent. Indeed, it does appear that that is also the case with respect to some government officials. I'll give an example of what I mean by that. We may recall that in the past, the governor of the central bank, the former governor of the central bank, had indicated that the ratings didn't matter that much in circumstances where the country wasn't contemplating any borrowing at the time. More recently, I've heard a government minister indicating that the recent rating from Standard & Poor's is a vote of confidence in the government's management of the economy. And I've heard some callers questioning the stable rating in circumstances where we are dealing with a significant economic recession at this point in time. And I would just like to attempt to explain why that is so for the benefit of the public. The ratings are in essence indication of the government's ability to service its debt or to repay its loan obligations. And to that extent, this current rating, it is a very positive and appropriate rating from Standard & Poor's. And it is, in effect, a vote of confidence in the financial management of the public finances of the government. And the government, indeed, should be commended for being able to restore the public finances and put them on a sustainable footing. Of course, that was largely accomplished on account of the debt restructuring. And thankfully, they were able to complete that before the onset of this COVID recession. Now, the reason why the rating would be was maintained as stable, and why Standard & Poor's would have made reference to there being some degree of stability. The key point there is because the foreign reserves are they're just about $1 billion in foreign reserves at this point in time, and that lends itself to a stability as it relates to the government being able to continue to service its debt and no concerns being there not being any concerns with respect to debt servicing going forward. And similar vein, in the lead up to the 2013 election, the governor of the central bank then had indicated that the economy was stable. What was more correct is that the foreign reserves were adequate so that there weren't any concerns about possible devaluation or inability to service debt. And so that the rating agencies are given, they tend to give a diagnosis of the government's ability to service its debt and not so much indication of the performance of the economy generally. To the extent that they comment on the performance of the economy is because that provides a context within which debt servicing can be met. And that would explain why the rating agency, the Standard & Poor's rating, was maintained. That is appropriate in the circumstances, notwithstanding the fact that we are going through a pretty severe recession right now. And that is because of two things. Fundamentally, the foreign reserves are high, so the government would be able to continue to service its foreign debt. And government's public finances are healthy to the extent that they've been running surpluses more recently, and the government has had a pretty robust access to financing, particularly from multilateral institutions, and therefore I think that we should not misconstrue the role of the rating agencies and what rating actually represent.
All right, thank you very much, Carlos, for it.
Thank you.
Clarifying that. This person says here that they want to the comment on this thing about the jingles that have been put out, trying to urge citizens to move citizens away from gun violence and that sort of thing. And while they are supportive of that, they're saying that DJs on these stations are playing songs promoting violence inclusive of gun use more often. Isn't that counterproductive to the radio stations, on the radio station's part? If that is happening, wherever you hear it, I think it's correct, it's counterproductive. And here again, I say to you all, the people who run radio stations are not in a position to hear everything that goes out there. If ever you are listening to a radio station and you hear something that you do not consider to be acceptable, you call the management of the station and you draw it to their attention. If the management fails to do something about it, that's another matter. But I would encourage you, we are all in this together. And one way of dealing with it is for you as members of the public to participate in various ways in trying to protect the country. This other person says that as far as they're concerned, this whole question of the heavy lifting, as they put it, is, they say here, getting rid of all the men is the heavy lifting. I am a lady, says the writer, and I am very concerned about all this talk about women empowerment. So, what are your thoughts? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air? Welcome to the program.
You are indeed a veteran and professional journalist. And it's to your credit that you can be deemed as a very painstaking individual. Case in point, Miss Ellis, the lady referred to as the Trinidadian lady feels that the program is hers and she has the right to have all the say so as to dominate. I say no more on that. What I really called to talk about, one of your regular callers, Mr. Agriculture, has given worldwide contributions to this program. While researching some of his contributions, I took special note that he said that Andrew's multipurpose factory would never get off the ground and kite charge should not be barred out from flying their kite. He went on to say that it was the wrong choice and the investment should be at Buckley Sugar Factory. Today, sir, thousands of dollars were invested in liver tamarins at the Bell and elsewhere, which now can be deemed as a man-made force, a waste of good agricultural land. And nearly 2 years after coming to office, a comment is still being awaited from the Minister of Agriculture on the River Tamarind. We have a lot of land that can be deemed as wasted agricultural land only awaiting for the approval for change of use to plant concrete.
Well, you should have seen the comments that were made by the ex-agricultural official in the newspaper today. That is a comment worthy of some attention. This is immediate past Chief Agricultural Officer Lennox Chandler made the same observation. One of my concerns coming out of the St. George North by-election has been the promise that more than one candidate made about housing. But you know what? They talked about St. George being the breadbasket and an important agricultural area. But you know, I can't remember hearing any discussion about the balance between housing and agriculture in St. George North. I remember years ago stirring up some controversy in asking a question about land being cut up in St. George and being allowed to run fallow so that people could go in the direction of getting permission to subdivide land for houses. I can't imagine how people could be running about in a constituency and talking about that particular constituency and the, its importance as a place for the growing of food. And there is no discussion whatsoever about how much of that land is going to be retained for agriculture and how much of it is going to be put into housing, because there is a lot of concern in some quarters, and it has long been so. I remember Barbados Labour Party, the Barbados Labour Party in the past, being particularly concerned about that balance. And this is another example of what we are talking about when you hear these campaigns being run, and some important aspects of what they are putting to us on the campaign, and that's just not being explored. I still want to hear about that balance as we go forward, because it is crucial, it is very important. Lennox Chandler says today in the newspaper that a lot of the land in Barbados has gone to bush. We have a lot of idle land. Drive around the country and you will see the evidence. Bush is all over the place, and people are just waiting to cut it up and build houses. But we have enough land to feed our people. This issue of gender in Barbados is going to be an important one moving forward. This person says, I'm a woman and I'm in full agreement with the observation of that lady. We need all persons to do the heavy lifting in Barbados. Now, you know where I stand on this whole question of the gender conflict. I think it's potentially dangerous. I think that there are too many, especially young men in Barbados, who are showing us signs that could take this country in the wrong direction, because they feel left out or marginalized. By the same token, it is very important to give women the opportunity to attain their aspirations. I speak as somebody, I have three daughters, all right? Therefore, I want the best for my daughters, and I also want the best for my son and my grandchildren, my grandsons. But what sometimes happens here is that you move too far east is west. And we got to be very careful about the messages that we are sending in this country. We already have a situation where when it comes to education, there are a lot of males who are not getting, they're not getting it. Too many of them are going in the wrong direction. Gender conflict, to me, has played a crucial role in helping to create that crime problem that we have out there in this society. It's not the only factor, but it is one of the factors. Therefore, those who are in leadership in Barbados really need to be very careful about the kind of messages that they appear to be sending at times. You've got to be very cautious with it. They got a lot of men in this country who don't have any guts to get up and speak about any of these things, because once people tell you, well, you're chauvinist, you don't like women, you don't want to see the progress of women, these are the immediate things that come from those who are critical of men, saying, well, look, I don't agree. They just go in the corner, and as much man as they say they are, they just stay in the corner and are quiet. But I, from where I sit, I think it is something that we need to be able to discuss, because it is too important within the context of how this society is developing. This is down to brass tacks. It is now 1:48. Welcome to the program. Oh. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Ellis, I am concerned about the Democratic Labour Party, mm-hmm. in particular. if you had a child to send to lessons, would you send that child to lessons with somebody who did not pass the exam?
Well, most people wouldn't, unless that person demonstrated growth in other areas. Because you don't measure a person's contribution and qualities exclusively by the passing of the exam.
Yeah, but if this is the exam that your child is going to sit, and that person failed twice, would you still have confidence in putting your child to do the exam with that person?
Well, you answered the question. Maybe, I suppose it's rhetorical.
But this is the trouble with the Democratic Labour Party. You have at the head two ladies who have failed twice. Winning is an art. Winning is a habit. They ran in elections when the whole force was out and everything was up behind them. They have not succeeded in getting a seat. How are you going to lead somebody to something and you know nothing about it?
So let me ask you something. In the current circumstances facing the Democratic Labour Party, where nobody has won a seat, there will be no leader?
No, I'm not talking about nobody has won a seat. Never. I'm talking about that. Where are the men? Where are the other people who have won seats before? Where are they now?
They don't have seats now.
But the point is that
so does that disqualify them?
But they have no. They have done so in past elections. I'm talking about people who have run in elections and have won a seat before. Well, where are they?
I think you
these
need to.
Women, need these to. Women have never won their seat.
But the truth of the matter is that, however, whatever direction you go in, you're likely to get an argument against it. You and I know, contrary to what the Trinidadian woman said earlier, you and I know the climate that prevailed since the last election towards many of those people who ran for the Democratic Labour Party in the last election. And I believe that the party itself has been sensitive to those concerns, at least for a period. The people themselves appeared to have gone, to have retreated a bit, because they needed to be able to re-examine where they went wrong, give this thing time, then determine what next they're going to do. So in those circumstances, you are left with somebody who didn't win a seat, but you know, it is quite possible that that person can be given an opportunity to grow into what you're looking for.
No, but the point is you don't grow on the job. This winning is a habit.
This is politics.
And if you cannot learn to win.
This is politics. And you are talking about.
If you cannot learn to win.
You are talking about this as though this is so concrete. It is not. I have been around long enough to see people run for seats 3 and 4 times and then win. You know, these are the variables of politics.
You haven't been around as long as I have.
Precisely.
Been.
And you know it has happened.
Yes, but the point is that there has to be somebody behind you. You have to have encouragement. You have to have people behind you pushing you.
No, look, ma'am, you know full well that you can reach a point. You can reach a point in politics where it is less about what you are or who you are, and it has more to do with whether people get fed up with the administration that is there and that sort of thing.
A disaster, because the members of that party, if they cared anything about it, would come to the rescue and stand up and fight.
And do what? And let people say that you were part of the last administration and you have no moral authority to lead?
I'm not telling them to run for the thing. But help, man. You know how to win. You have won before. You know how to win. Help somebody, man.
Man, listen, let me tell you all something, because we need to talk
no,
as
no,
though...
No,
you, let
no,
me tell you all, something. The BLP...
You know this thing about politics.
The BLP today is strong. The BLP went through a period, too, when in opposition, it had few hands available to help in rebuilding the party.
But
only
it
a few
leaders.
Well, the thing about it, it had a presence in parliament, and that's the difference.
But it had leaders. It had people who had been there before. It had people who had won before.
Well, I think
but
that
this,
the circumstances...
These two have never won. You know, winning is an art. Winning is a kind of thing that grows on you. You know how to win. Watch athletes and some of the good ones, and you see when they come into the end, there's something that gets in them, and they know how to get to that tape. Winning is an art. Watch for cricketers. They know how to thing that ball and not to let get to the stump when they come into the last round.
And David Thompson lost elections how many times before? Not a seat, but lost elections as a leader of the Democratic Labour Party how many times?
But the point is, he could lose as a leader, but the point is that there were other people that were winning.
Well, the Democratic Labour Party is in a difficult...
You mean there is nobody at all in that party that has won before that can step up? Right. Of course, the elections, they left Mr. Thing there by himself. He was the only person.
Well, I can assure you that whoever attempts to come to lead the Democratic Labour Party right now will face an onslaught of criticism.
Yeah, but the point is that you've got to stand up. If there are men, stand up like a man.
Well, the way to deal with that is that they have to do their own internal examination, they have to do their own studies.
But in the meantime, they're only exposing these people, these ladies, to greater failure, because you cannot teach anybody to win if you have never won.
I really don't. Look, to come with that argument is, I don't accept that. Because let me talk, because you butting in all the time. Let me say something to you.
No, not like the Trinidadian woman. Don't
you sound just like she today. Let me say something to you. It is not really true that you can't teach somebody to win because you haven't won yourself. There are many people. I'll give you an example. Hartley Henry ran for St. George in Barbados, one of the St. George seats, and did not win. How many people, including this Barbados Labour Party, that has won? How many parties across Barbados, and not Barbados, across the region, has he been able to take to the winning tape, notwithstanding the fact that he never won a seat in Barbados?
But the point is that there must be somebody with you who has.
What your argument therefore is defeated, that you can't teach somebody to win just because you didn't win yourself.
No,
not many people who coach people to be outstanding cricketers, but haven't been outstanding cricketers themselves. I don't buy that argument. That's the counter to you on that. This is has been Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to Dennis Johnson. And I also want to say how pleasing it is to be back with you on Down to Brass Tacks after my short leave. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.